When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hey everybody, welcome, and thank you for listening to this episode of Marriage Therapy Radio. My name is Zach Brittle. I'm here with Laura Heck. If you're new to the podcast, you haven't met us before, we do a new thing where we introduce ourselves again. If you're old hat and you've been around, then maybe you'll learn something new. But we tried recording for a minute, and we were all over the place. It was a little bit of a train wreck, so we stopped and we started over, and so you're getting like kind of take two on a Sunday morning, which is also unusual. Because Laura and I are both traveling quite a bit over the next few weeks. We have a couple of different pivots off of our normal MO coming up, so that'll be fun while I go on spring break, and then I do a training trip, and then I go to a wedding, which I think you hear all about in this episode. Additionally, we're talking about triggers, emotional triggers, what to do, how to respond, what even is it? Is it the right word? I think sometimes the word trigger is overused in our therapeutic culture, but maybe it's in your culture too. So we think through some ideas about how to manage those triggers. And as always, this is a very cool conversation. Stick around.
Y'all, this is the second recording because it's a Sunday morning at 8 a.m., which we normally don't record, but we decided to make it happen. And the first one was a dumpster fire. So we're going to go ahead and scrap that.
Here's the situation. We're both traveling quite a bit.
Yes.
And so we've had to pick up some recordings.
Yeah.
Over the next little bit, you'll hear different versions of Marriage Therapy Radio. Some with two of us, some with only one of us, some with us interviewing. I did an interview yesterday that I'm very excited about.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay.
I got an interview request from a high school student who wanted help with their research paper.
Aww.
So I said, I will help you with the research paper as long as we do it on the podcast. And she was like, I'm in. Let's do it. So,
okay. So she asked you questions and you recorded it for our podcast.
Yep.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
That was good double dipping right there.
And then I asked her questions in return. So I got to learn all about like
high school relationships.
Adolescent relationships. Yeah.
Oh, that's amazing.
Yeah.
Good. Well done. That's kind of smart.
Thanks.
I like that.
So I'm excited to see what you come up with. See if you can one up that one.
Yeah. We'll see where that goes. Okay. So here's what I want to do. One of my favorite podcasts. They introduce themselves every time they start the podcast in case they have new listeners, which I know that we probably do. And I just recently heard, I think it was from, you know what it was? It was my physician, like literally my physician listens to the podcast. No, different physician.
I told that story last night to somebody else.
It's a good one, right?
Yeah.
Did it make it on the podcast?
You told it on here. Yeah.
Yeah, but whether or not Jason allowed it in,
it's definitely been on the podcast. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
No, not my pap smear guy. She's in my running group, and she happens to be my primary physician. And she said, I had been listening to the podcast and I was probably about months in, and I finally realized that Zach is not your husband. Newsflash. Zach and I are not married to each other.
We are married.
But not to each other.
Just not to each other. That's our thing that we like to say when we go speaking and everybody chuckles and it's like it's a little joke.
So here's my blurb. I'm Laura. Laura Heck, in case you want to, cyber stalk me. You can find us on Marriage Therapy Radio. I have a private practice. I'm a couples therapist. I specialize in working just with couples with sexual and intimacy. I'm also a sex therapist. High conflict relationships. Zach and I are both certified Gottman therapists. That's how we met, was through the Gottman Institute. We, at one point, actually were both paid employees of the Gottman Institute at the same time.
Laura was my boss.
That is true. That was a weird dynamic.
Yeah,
that didn't work out well, actually.
Nope.
Zach, by the way, is one of those guys that takes his shoes off at his desk in case you're kind of like trying to imagine like, oh, what kind of person is Zach? He did like a Mr. Rogers move where he would... take his shoes off at his desk and then put on a different pair of shoes when he was at the office, which I can't remember what they were, but what else? I'm married. I've been married since 2009 to Ryan Heck, and he is the ultimate daddy to our 9-year-old son. For those of you who've been around for a while, Holden just had his 6-month scans. He has a rare genetic disorder where tumors grow. It's called NF2 in his brain and spine. And we've been treating it with immunotherapy. And yay, all of the scans are like his tumors are all stable. They're not shrinking. There's no new tumors. They're not getting bigger. They're just stable, including his hearing is the same. So that's all good news. That's what I got.
Great.
Who are you?
I'm Zach. Zach Brittle. I'm a couples therapist. I'm a published author. I'm the host of a podcast called Marriage Therapy Radio with my friend and colleague, Laura Heck.
That's me.
I have a private practice in Seattle, Washington. I see only couples. I actually like telling people that I'm bad at individual therapy.
Me too.
I think it actually makes me more credible as a couples therapist, but it's also just true. I'm married to Rebecca. We've been married for 26 years. We have 2 children. They are adulting girls, so 17 and 21. And I'm presently hobbyless. I don't have any hobbies that I'm like into. I don't have anything interesting to tell you about my non-work life at the moment, except that I've recently discovered travel. That's a thing. I'm going to New York City this week with my wife and second daughter, and we're just going to like bum around the city and look at things and shop.
Awesome.
And I think Rebecca's going to go to a show. And
will you hide something in the city for me to find like you did at Disneyland?
When are you going to the city?
November.
Probably not.
I think I'm so funny because it's April. All right, fine.
Yeah. Yeah. So I'm doing a thing I've never done before. I'm doing this thing where I leave my house on Tuesday and I don't come back for like 12 days. And I'm going to 3 different places. So I'm leaving Seattle on a Tuesday and I go to New York.
Yeah.
I'm in New York for a few days. And from New York, I go to Denver. And then I'm in Denver for a few days. And then from Denver, I go to California. And I'm in California for a few days. And then I come home.
Denver is the RLT training, right?
Denver's the training. Yep.
What's in California for you?
We're going to a wedding. It is the first wedding of one of our friend's children.
This child
used to like run around our house and, you know, eat our food and we would babysit them. And now they're getting married and we are this. So it's the first wedding of an adult child, I guess.
Yeah, that's a thing.
So pretty intense.
Yeah.
Funny story. So my husband left with my son on a road trip to Pebble Beach 4 days ago, and we have just been reunited, and I'm getting ready in the bathroom here in Carmel, searching through his toiletry bag for toothpaste, and wouldn't you know it, there is my missing OneSkin moisturizer. That sneaky turtle. I have always suspected that he's been using my favorite skincare, but I've never actually seen him apply it. So there you have it, folks. OneSkin isn't just for the lady who wants to turn back time and simplify their skincare regimen. It's for the gentleman as well. OneSkin was founded by 4 PhDs dedicated to skin longevity, and their topical supplements make it easy to help your skin stay younger and healthier without all of those extra steps. So what is the secret? OneSkin's proprietary OS1 peptide. It is the first ingredient scientifically proven to reduce the buildup of senescent cells, those notorious zombie cells that contribute to skin aging. So fewer zombie cells means healthier, younger looking skin with fewer lines and wrinkles, reduced age spots, and a stronger natural barrier. So that's something especially important this time of year. OneSkin is more than just skincare. It's about skin longevity. It's targeting the root causes of aging to help you look and feel your very best at every age. So get started today with 15% off using your code MTR at oneskin.co with code MTR. And after you purchase, they'll ask you where you heard about them. So please support our show. Tell them that we sent you. It's time to expect more from your skincare routine. Invest in the health of your skin with OneSkin.
So here's what I wanted to talk about today. I wanted to talk about triggers, which is, it's interesting because we did an episode where we talked about like commonly misconstrued or underrepresented or overrepresented, or, you know, just like a specific terminology in the therapy world that is misused. And I think the word triggers gets misused. And
I don't think we ever aired that episode actually.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
I think it went away. So we can talk about it like we never talked about it. That's kind of cool.
The word triggers is one of the words that I think people use.
It was definitely a word right now that is very, very common in the therapy world and maybe indeed misconstrued, as you said.
Mm-hmm. So the first thing I just wanted to do was kind of demystify it a little bit as to like what actually is a trigger. Mm-hmm. And that way we kind of all have like the same language to start from. So
you and me and all the people that are listening.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. They can add in. Yeah. The idea of here's the thing that I don't like. I don't like the phrase, you triggered me. First of all, I don't like it when you blame somebody and you use you, but what might have happened is that you had an experience that brought up old feelings, old emotions, and like old neural pathways. So somebody can't trigger you. You can get triggered, but them just living their life or doing something, it's not a thing that they're doing to you. It's a thing, an experience that is unique to yourself. So if we could all just sort of make a pact right here and right now that we won't use the word you triggered me, own that as your own unique experience. So how would you describe a trigger? How would you like describe what that is for someone?
Mm-hmm. To me, it's, there's all kinds of different language for it. I actually like the one that the Gottmans use, which is about an enduring vulnerability. So there's a part of your body, there's a part of your story, there's a part of your soul that is particularly vulnerable. And it's been vulnerable for a very long time for any number of reasons. And for some reason, something comes along and it just pokes at that vulnerability.
Yeah.
And I think that's the trigger, right? A lot of times when I think about triggers, I don't really like the word. I don't really like the sound of the word as an English guy. Like I don't enjoy that at all. Second of all, I don't really care for how it's sort of associated with, like an actual weapon. Like just like there's a, like it just doesn't, that doesn't really do anything to me. When I think about people being triggered, I almost think about them walking through the woods and they get like, they're trying to squeeze by a tree and the tree like pokes them. The tree hits them and then it hits them in a particularly vulnerable spot. So it's like, it's just this, like button push, that's sometimes inadvertent. And sometimes of course people can swing a tree branch at you. Someone might be literally trying to, but I think it's most often this sort of unconscious or passive experience of having one of your vulnerabilities exposed and kind of poked at.
Yeah. And I do think that in relationships, there's going to be, you know, the person that's closest to you is going to have the most access to your enduring vulnerabilities.
Sure.
So my guess is that, I mean, depending on what your vulnerability might be, it might be the person closest to you that has the most access to that soft spot. That's kind of what I call it in my office, is like a soft spot. So when I think about triggers,
I mean, of course they do. I mean, when you live with someone, there's an assumed safety, which means you tend to let your guards down.
Right.
Which means, like, if you just think about, if you even just think about like visually what I'm describing, like you move around the world with a force field, and when you come into your home, the place that's supposed to be the safest, most of us let our force field down, which necessarily makes us the most vulnerable.
Yeah. You know?
And then the people in our homes are the ones that have the most access to that force field less part of us.
Yeah. But I don't think that's always the case. I mean, I'm thinking too, kind of depending on what your vulnerability might be, like there might be, you might feel incredibly competent, successful, worthy, all of these amazing things in your home. You might have a great amount of security and trust in the relationship. And then in the workplace, you might have a particular person that you're working with that, or just in the workplace in general, of like, I'm here to make money and maybe I'm not making enough money. And so that might be tapping into some kind of a vulnerability or sensitivity that you have. And it might be your boss that's tapping into that over and over and over. Mm-hmm. And you might be getting triggered in the workplace, just kind of depending on what that is. But I do think that if you're experiencing triggers with your loved one, it's not necessarily because it's not a good fit. It's because, like you said, there's a level of vulnerability that we have with those intimate partners where our force field is down.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So here's what I think about when I think of triggers. A trigger is you are in a situation with, let's just say, your partner, your intimate partner, and something happens between the two of you and you're experiencing like an emotional response and reactivity that goes beyond what we would say is sort of like a, I'm not even going to use the word normal, but almost like a proportionate amount of
it's
emotion.
It's like the offense is
that.
A three, but the response is a six.
Exactly.
And so somebody says, how was your day? And that's a one, but you go, don't ask me that right now.
Totally.
That's coming for that. That's the sign maybe that there's a trigger.
Maybe that touched on some kind of a vulnerability. And so what's going on is that you're responding with old information, and that old information is a childhood experience or an emotional state that you commonly experience or associate with this thing. Mm-hmm. So that's what I think of as a trigger. And most often when I'm working with partners, I would say the other partner who's not experiencing a trigger has a very common feeling that they experience, and it's confusion. I felt confused. And that's what I hear from a lot of people when we're talking about this moment in time that happened, and they go, and then you reacted and you did this and I was confused. That's usually a really good sign that, okay, this doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me. I said this, you interpreted what I just said, and your emotional reactivity to me was so beyond what I would have expected in that situation that I was confused. What's the backstory on this? What's going on? So now that we're all on kind of the same page with emotional triggers, what do you do in this situation? Like when you have
a relationship. Am I the triggered or am the one who maybe was the triggerer?
Well, let's first talk about the one who is being triggered at that moment of like step by step of like, okay, I am in this moment with my partner and I'm triggered and I notice that I have a lot of emotional reactivity. Mm-hmm. What are some tips that you would have for somebody who's experiencing emotional triggers?
I mean, this has kind of been the work of my life over the last 3 years personally is I think you have to, I think it's a practice, and if you want to call it a practice of mindfulness, that's fine. But I think just in general, you have to practice separating the response from the stimulus. So I'm walking through the forest and a limb that's just hanging there, minding its own business, pokes me in the arm, which is a very, very vulnerable spot of me. I have some possible responses at that time. I can start immediately flailing and striking back and use my stick to whack the tree and be like, you MFing tree, you know, I could do that. Or I could go, whoa, oh, that hurt. I think it's, you know, separating stimulus from response. And I think about, you know, you have to increase your responsibility, which of course you've heard me say before is the ability to respond, responsibility. So if I'm the person whose enduring vulnerability has been struck or poked or, you know, provoked, I really believe in personal responsibility, ability to respond, which you can only do by slowing down and evaluating what is the actual situation here.
Right.
Because the fact that my partner, you know, did or said something that caused me to have a uncomfortable response doesn't mean that they did anything wrong.
Right.
It just means it could mean that they were clumsy. It could mean that they were trying to provoke me. It could mean that they didn't even notice and it was completely my fault. So I think, you know, the answer to the question of what do? I think you slow down.
Right.
Long enough to figure out what the appropriate response is. And I do think that that takes practice. People say, oh, it's really hard for me to do that. I go, yeah, it is hard. It is hard. That's why you have to practice.
Yeah. Okay. 100%. That's kind of the first step that I would say is you have to be able, and we in Gottman sort of method, what we talk about is if you're experiencing an emotional flooding, or I would say a flooding event, where you are triggered to the point where now you're not even thinking clearly and you need to slow down, it means that you're taking a break and you're calming down, you're self-soothing because your nervous system is getting really activated and it's probably tapping into a lot of old information. So taking a break, find a safe space, be able to calm down. Here's the thing that kind of came to me and why I wanted to talk to you about it, because I actually was like, okay, what do I actually do other than calm down? What do I need to be doing in that moment? Mm-hmm. And I wanted to test this, run it by you. Mm-hmm. When I'm getting triggered, and let's just say for some reason you have triggered my sense of trust in you. That's what's going on, is like, I have old information from maybe my childhood where I'm very distrustful, and I've been in multiple relationships where my trust has been broken. And there's something between you and I where, the trust was broken for whatever, but I'm having a disproportionate response or reaction to the trust that you just, maybe you forgot the milk, right? Like I said, hey, can you bring the milk home? And you showed up and you didn't bring the milk and you didn't hear me and you didn't follow through. And now I'm having a level 9 response. What do I do? I think what's going on is that we need to be able to shift gears, because when I'm having a reaction, this is where I was thinking. We're looking for confirmation bias. We're looking for reasons to validate why I'm having this experience right now at this moment. Mm-hmm. So if I'm feeling like I'm a level 9, I'm going to start looking for all the ways in which you have broken my trust in the past. So I'm looking for confirmation of, here's the thing that you did 9 months ago. Here's the thing that you did 3 years ago. Here's the way in which you broke my trust, you know, yesterday. So I'm looking for all these things, like evidence to support and validate my experience in the moment. Cause I'm already feeling really overwhelmed and confused. So I'm looking for confirmation bias. If you're somebody who's getting triggered, I think we need to be able to slow down, self-soothe. Once you're in a softer place, you actually have to flip it, and you have to find ways in which your partner is actually trustworthy. Does that make sense? So if I naturally am going to lean into finding ways in which you've broken my trust, I have to shift gears and turn 180 degrees and find all of the examples in which you are an actual trustworthy human being, which is going to be difficult and impossible if you are flooded. But I would say if you come to a space of being more calm and present, it might be helpful to just sit down with your notebook and go, I am having a trigger. This is old information. This is from the past. I now need to get into the present, and I need to find information that's going to disprove this emotional response that I'm having from the past. Does that make sense? Okay.
Yeah. And I think there's a lot of therapeutic preemptive work you can do here. Like, that's really hard to do. I was thinking about how in that moment, you may also be able to ask for what you need. And if you don't have the words because you're flooded, this is where we have code words like royal unicorn, or the, you've heard me tell the yellow penalty flag story, just like a way to signal, I don't know what's going on. I'm not even sure it's your fault. I just know that right now I'm in like lizard brain, and you just sort of like raise the flag, or just sort of say, you know, pineapple, or whatever it is that you need to say.
Yeah.
And that's it preemptively. That's a contract that you could have. And then Ryan could go, totally. How about I go just, I'll give you a couple minutes. I'll come back and bring you a glass of water, or whatever is kind of pre-coded into the trust or the repair mechanism, you know, like, cause I think there are ways that you can, yes, you need to be responsible for your own stuff, but if you can't, you know, in a securely attached relationship, ideally you're helping each other, you know, in that moment. And so if I'm working with you as a couple and you're asking me about this, I think I would work into this space where I was like, all right, Laura, well, when you find that space and you know that your trust thing is, and whether or not it has anything to do with Ryan, why don't you, you know, make this little symbol with your hands, you know, two fingers crossed like this or something. And then Ryan, that means for you to know, it doesn't matter what or why or where this is coming from. It matters that you provide a measure of trustworthiness, that you say, I can handle this. Let me go get you a glass of water, whatever the symbol is, so that the two of you have a contracted way out of these outsized responses. You know, it doesn't matter why you got to a level 8. It matters that you're at a level 8.
Right.
And next step is getting you back into a 4.
Right.
You know, 3-2, whatever.
Yeah. So I gave an example of sort of what do you, as the person who has been triggered, what can you do independently? You gave an example of what can the two of you do in order for that situation. Another example that I would have of what to do is when you're not experiencing triggers, and maybe you just listen to this episode and you're like, do I have any enduring vulnerabilities? Do I have any sensitivities? You definitely do. If you think about the most, 100%. You think about like in the history of your relationship, maybe some of the most explosive, harming, damaging, hurtful arguments, conflicts you've ever gotten into, my guess is that it's because one or both of you kind of tapped into an enduring vulnerability. Yeah. And almost it's 100%. Usually around areas of I'm feeling worthless. I feel like I'm too much, that I'm not enough.
I'm unsafe.
Yeah, I'm unsafe. My safety, my security, my trust is being, is at risk. So those are some things that I would say when you're not triggered and you're on a walk and you're having a nice time connection, share those moments with each other and say, here's what I know about myself as like a vulnerability. And this is something that we need to honor and protect with one another and try our hardest not to tap into whatever that vulnerability is going to be. And it's interesting because I was just thinking about this, that in my relationship with the people that I'm closest with, I haven't, I would say, explicitly thought through what their vulnerabilities are, but I'm constantly in protection mode, constantly in mode of, I do this thing so that I can protect this loved one from experiencing this type of pain, because I know that that's a vulnerability that they might have. For my mom, it's about a sense of control. And so whenever I can, I try and give her as much control as possible. Yeah. And I try not to take that away from her because I know that that taps into a vulnerability.
Yeah. It's like what Matt Frey was saying about how he's dating the gal with the gluten allergy.
Yes.
You know, like when you find out that your partner has an allergy to not being in control or to, you know, having the doors unlocked at night, or, I mean, it's just, you know, because of safety, like then you just, your job is to help steward that and make sure that you protect them from, you know, it basically don't go eat a bunch of donuts in front of your partner's face and tell them it's their problem, you know, like.
And then make out with them.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
No, I think, you know, the thing about responding in the ways that you're describing, which is where you have like a level 6 response to a level 1 offense or something like that, I also think there's something to appreciate about how we probably, like you said, maybe you said this in the train wreck part, but like, you're nearing 40, I'm 50, you know, usually when we're doing those outsized responses, it's not the 40-year-old or the 50-year-old that's responding. It's the 13-year-old or the 8-year-old or the 22-year-old, or, you know, and I think it's our job to appreciate that there are parts of us who are inclined to, you know, respond out of really just well-practiced, you know, mechanisms in our brain.
Yeah.
And that it's our job to kind of go, wait, hold on. 40-year-old me actually has skills to manage this. I've got a career. I'm a mom. I have friends. I'm not flailing like a child. I don't need to flail like a child here.
Yeah. So. Yeah. I think we could probably talk a lot more about this, maybe a little more in depth, because I'd like to dig in a little bit more in the future. And actually, I'd love to hear from our listeners if they have anything to say about specific triggers, or things that they've noticed, maybe enduring vulnerabilities, if there's a theme that they're noticing pop up for them, or ways in which they have learned to manage when they're having kind of like a disproportionate response. Mm-hmm. And then also, if you are witnessing your partner go through the experience of the trauma of getting like one of their enduring vulnerabilities kind of touched on, what do you do when you notice that your partner is being triggered? How can you support them in that relationship? I would be really interested in hearing that. We can learn from each other.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, you have a meeting that starts now.
I got another thing that I got to go do on a Sunday morning. Obviously I thought 45 minutes would be enough. So
yeah. It's all right.
Maybe we'll put some outtakes in from the first 15 minutes that we recorded.
All right. Let's land this plane. All right, I'm going to hop in. If the audio sounds a little different, it's just because Zach had to run off to he's probably getting a pedicure, let's be honest, off to his next meeting. But I want to be sure to tell you a little bit about what's coming up. So we have a weekend intensive that's coming up. We offer them quarterly. They're an opportunity for you if you just, maybe you haven't tried therapy before, maybe you've just kind of had a rough spring and it's been tough to connect and you're just kind of looking for a little bit of a reset, our weekend intensive is a really awesome way to be able to just kind of like reset for the two of you, to be able to spend some time focusing on your relationship, focusing on the two of you, learning a whole lot of amazing skills that you'll be able to carry with you, and just create momentum where maybe you've grown stale. So our spring intensive is coming up on May 17th and 18th. It's a Friday evening from 4 p.m. Pacific Standard Time to 7 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. So it's not too stinking late if you're on the East Coast. We've also had folks join us from, internationally, which is kind of amazing. And then we're going to join up again the next day on Saturday at 8 a.m. Pacific Standard Time until 3 p.m. So it's not going to take your entire weekend, but I can tell you that it is a lot of really high quality time. It's 9 hours focused on doing exercises with your partner. You can join us virtually. And we're going to be going through all 7 of the 7 principles for making marriage work. You can find that on our website. It's marriagetherapyradio.com. If you scroll down a little bit on the right-hand side, it gives you an option for our intensives or our series. And the intensive is coming up on May 17th and 18th. It's $450 for the two of you to attend, and registration takes you less than 60 seconds. Thanks for all of your time and attention, making your relationship better today than it was yesterday.